Welcome to Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. Thank you so much for being here with us today. I'm Jason Kong alongside Bill Alexander. Bill, how are you doing today?
Jason, I am good, and it's always a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure for me too, Bill. We always have a good time doing these programs, and I guess we got to start things out with a minor correction.
True. Last week I was talking, as we get edging closer to the start of school, for those in higher education, we know that the cost is pretty prohibitive. And so basically last week I spoke about education tax credits. You know, I like any way to lower our income tax is a good thing. And so if you or a loved one that is actually a dependent, that's still a dependent on your tax return and you're paying for it, then there is a tax credit. But if you're the student and paying for it yourself, there's a tax credit too. And they're two different tax credits. I want to reiterate that. One's a little better than the other, but they're both good. You have the American Opportunity Education Tax Credit, and then you have the Lifetime Learning Tax Credit. Now, of course, one of the things that for someone who does not owe any tax, the American Opportunity Credit, which you can only use for 4 years, actually allows you to get money back up to $1,000, whereas the credit itself is good for up to $2,500. And at least for most people, that would be a slam dunk. And, you know, a tax credit's better than a deduction. It basically takes your taxes off dollar for dollar. And, of course, the other one, which is the lifetime learning credit, is up to $2,000. And so for those folks who are eligible for the opportunity, the American Opportunity Credit, should use that first, and then to the degree that they have additional years of education, they can use the other credit. Now, unfortunately, the lifetime learning credit doesn't give you a money back, but it can in fact zero out your taxable income, which is pretty sweet if you think about it. That's a pretty nice leg up for those folks who have to pour out the money for education. But I did make a mistake last week, and that is I was talking about the fact that our legislature had lowered the tuition, and I mentioned three institutions. And I mentioned the fact that, and I believe it's called the North Carolina Promise. Is that correct? Yeah, well, we were talking about it. And, of course, the North Carolina Promise at actually four institutions, not three, is the tuition's only $500 per semester. Well, that, my friends, is dirt cheap. And now, it doesn't pay for room and board, you know, but at the same time, in terms of tuition and books and things like that, and of course, I should also say that the tax credits that are available are not for room and board. It's only for tuition and basically, and of course, the opportunity credit also includes books that are necessary for each semester and things like that. But the bottom line is, I failed to mention, and I apologize for this, the fourth school. Quite frankly, I forgot. That's what old age does to you. But Elizabeth City State is the fourth school that I did not mention last week, and I apologize to those folks. It's nice to have a good university in Eastern North Carolina, which Elizabeth City State represents. And then you have Fayetteville State University, that's in the middle of the state, if you get right down to it. Then you have Pembroke, which is on the south side of the state. And then you have Western Carolina University, which is in the western part of the state. So you basically have a low-tuition university, all part of the North Carolina University system, which are included in the North Carolina Promise. So don't tell me you can't find a way to go to college. I mean, it's there for you, and it makes a huge difference. And frankly, it gives folks the opportunity that might not otherwise have the opportunity to go, because people do struggle to pay the high cost of education, and it makes a huge difference. Now, with that said, I also want to come back to another topic that I have mentioned at least two or three times before, but it's the kind of thing that if folks are not listening carefully and they miss it, it could mean a great deal to folks. So it's the kind of thing where anyone who has a business entity of any kind, whether it's a corporation or a limited liability company, anyone who is registered with a North Carolina entity, and by registered, I'm saying with the Secretary of State of North Carolina, which includes companies that may be chartered outside the state but do business in the state, everybody other than big companies that are required to report to the Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, because big companies generally have to report quarterly to the SEC. But this has to do with the new, I shouldn't say it's new, because it's not brand new. It's actually effective this year. So it's the kind of thing where it's been on the books for several years, but now it's coming into play. And that's the Corporate Transparency Act. And it applies to any entity, corporate or limited liability company, and it can go beyond that, that is registered, through the Secretary of State. It could be other entities as well, registered or not. But the fact is that every small business in North Carolina, this Corporate Transparency Act applies to, because small businesses don't report to the SEC. Okay. So here's the thing. If you were chartered before 2024, which is going to be most of you, okay, then you're required to go online and file a report with Homeland Security through what's called FinCEN, okay? And it's not an easy report to file. And small business people are going to find that it is horribly intrusive. And it requires every small business person to keep up this report on a monthly basis. The thing, you've heard me complain about it because I think it's a horrible breach of privacy, and it's going to add significant cost to every small business in the state of North Carolina. And it's all about the government's pursuit of money laundering and trying to basically ferret out terrorist activity in this country. Now, is that a legitimate idea? Sure. But they're imposing a huge burden on all the law-abiding citizens of North Carolina and every other state in order to help them figure out what they should be able to figure out without imposing this burden on us. But fact is, it's law now. So we are required to fill out this report. And you can't sit there and say, well, I'm not going to do it, because the fact is, if you don't do it, there is a huge fine for not doing it. There, you have a $500 per day fine for non-compliance with this, with these rules, with your requirement to file these reports. And there is a criminal sanction, 2 years imprisonment, and a $10,000 fine for willful non-compliance. So if you say, the hell with it, I'm not going to do it, that's willful non-compliance, and that's a criminal act. And just forgetting to do it or being late to do it could result in $500 a day. Well, that's big dollars for a lot of folks. And having practiced law for 48 plus years, I know that most small businessmen, don't keep good records. A lot of them don't even know where their corporate book is, let alone other things. It's like people are focused on making a living, not on, the other stuff. It's hard enough to get your taxes done timely for a lot of folks. Now, that's not everybody. There are folks who do everything right and that sort of thing. And I'm always delighted to meet with those folks. But the fact is, there are an awful lot of small businessmen that are barely making ends meet. And this requirement, quite frankly, could put a lot of folks under, because it imposes not just reporting, but it imposes a burden to verify what is being reported. In other words, you can't just make a statement. You have to have copies of driver's licenses and the like, or passports. And the point is that you have to report any decision maker in your company. You have to report anybody that is at least a 25% owner of your company. You have to report the attorney who helped you create the company. Hopefully you can do that if you can even remember who it was that did it. If you put your company in a trust, you have to report everything about your trust: who's the grantor, who's the trustee, who's the trust protector, who's the beneficiary, with all of their identifying information, their address, all their personal information, which the government intends to keep. And of course, this is Homeland Security, and by law, they are authorized to share all of this information with any law enforcement agency anywhere. So anywhere from the local sheriff to law enforcement agencies around the world, this act allows them to share your information with anybody they want to. And do I like this new law? Not at all. I think it's so intrusive. And the fact is, this is not Democrat or Republican. This is not politics. In fact, this law was enacted with bipartisan support. That means both Republicans and Democrats came together. I mean, Congress can't do much, but, they gave us this law. And the fact is, from my own perspective, Congress would do well to do away with this law, because I don't think it's going to help them one iota. The folks who are not law-abiding citizens are not going to comply with it, and it creates a huge burden on those of us who try to do everything right. So Now, I would also shout out a warning to realtors and real estate attorneys and others who deal with real estate transactions, because Congress is considering adding all of those transactions to this reporting requirement. And here's the next piece, and I know I'm going on about this, but it upsets me. And the fact here's you've done your report and you think you're done. Well, you're not done. Why? Because you're required to report any change to any of the information that you've gathered and sent to the government. And you only have 30 days from the date of change to report. And don't forget, $500 a day fine for not reporting timely. And now, what does that mean when things change? Well, if you move from one address to another address, that's a change. If a person in your company dies, if they're on your report, that's a change. If you have a person who gets married, that's a change. If their name changes, that's a change. If an owner sells all or part of the business, that's a change that you have to report. And for me, I do a lot of trust. So a lot of my clients own LLCs. You know, it might be they have two or three rental houses and they put them in an LLC. Then you're not only going to have to report about your LLC, but you got to report about your trust as well. So I'm just simply stating a fact that this law is something that you must comply with before the end of the year. Now, for those who create a company this year, 2024, you have 90 days to report your new entity to Homeland Security. 90 days. And then come next year, any change has to be reported within 30 days. So the folks who have older companies, those established before this year, have until the end of this year to basically provide all of this information to the government so that Big Brother can keep all this personal information on you and share it with anybody they decide they want to share it with. And then, of course, the other thing that concerns me is that now these computers are going to be a number one target for hackers. And don't tell me that the government will be able to keep our information secure, because we know that is not the truth. So, yes, you got me upset here, even talking about it. But the fact is, I think this is such an important issue for folks to know about.
Well, I can tell you're upset, and I'm getting upset, too, thinking about the ramifications of this, because you're right. That is a huge burden and also a huge potential security threat as well. And, you know, go ahead and take action now if you haven't already, because we've just turned the calendar over here to August. So the end of the year is in sight. And speaking of it being August, you also want to register for the free webinars put on by WG Alexander and Associates. Those are happening on Wednesday, August 14th. They do these the second Wednesday of every month. You can learn more about long-term care assistance as well as asset protection and trust planning. Go to WGALaw.com to learn more. Click on the seminars button at the top of the page, WGALaw.com. A short break and back, you're listening to Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. Learn more about the WG Alexander and Associates free webinars. Happen the second Wednesday of every month.
There's one coming up soon, Wednesday, August 14th. If you would like to learn more about long-term care assistance, this webinar deals with Medicaid, VA benefits, some areas where there's just, boy, a lot of myths and half-truths and misinformation. This is a very helpful, educational way for you to learn more about financial assistance that may be available to you and your loved ones who are dealing with a long-term care crisis. There's no cost associated with the webinars. It's completely free to attend. All you need to do is register in advance. Just go to wgalaw.com. Click on the seminars button at the top of the page. On Wednesday, August 14th, there's also a webinar that afternoon dedicated to asset protection and trust planning. If either of those are of interest to you, be sure to go to wgalaw.com, click on that seminars button, or you can also call the office. The phone number is 919-256-7000, 919-256-7000. Jason Kong here with Bill Alexander. And Bill, we're going to switch gears here a little bit and have a discussion on trust.
Well, you know, folks are coming to the realization that using a revocable trust for many, many folks is a great idea. Folks don't want to leave a mess for their family, and trust can actually make the process of moving property from one generation to the next much easier. It makes it simpler, faster. It is also, a lot of folks like it because it means that your property and your debts and the like are kept private, because you don't, if you have a trust that's fully funded, and I'm going to come back to that, but if you have a trust that's done properly, then your assets avoid court administration, or what most people know as probate. But in other words, for those folks who have a last will and testament, and those folks who don't have a last will and testament, in other words, they're basically working on intestacy rules, if you will, the rules that the state of North Carolina has for you, those folks have to go through the court system to have their estate administered. And of course, that takes much longer, and it's not private. It means that all of that information is public record. A lot of folks don't like that. And there's an expense to going through the court. Now, North Carolina is far more reasonable about those expenses that go through the court system, if you will, than many other states. But that doesn't mean that it's not a nice idea to avoid it altogether. And a revocable trust that's properly created and funded allows a family to avoid that process. So yeah, it's a good idea. Now, just some good things about using a revocable trust, and some folks don't realize it. They've heard about trust. They want to know if a trust is right for them. But here's the thing: when you create a trust and you transfer property to the trust, you're still using your social security number on all of your accounts. So in essence, you still pay your taxes the same way. And once you have everything transferred, then truthfully, from an emotional perspective, it feels just like you own it individually without a trust. But a trust does make it a little bit different, and particularly at your death. But the nicest thing about a revocable trust is it allows you to do far more sophisticated planning for your spouse and your children and grandchildren. And for those folks who have established any kind of estate and they really care about what happens to their property when they die, then a trust is a better way of basically transferring property at death. It Well, like I've already said, it's faster, cheaper, and you can have more control over how the property is actually distributed. Which, when you generally speaking, with any other type of planning, you actually can decide who it goes to with other planning, but not necessarily how it gets to them or when they can use it or any kind of thing that might be appropriate for your loved one. And of course, families are more complicated today. It's not unusual for children to have a step parent, you know, where there's a divorce or a death and a remarriage and children by previous marriage or marriages. Life is more complicated than it might have been years ago. And families are far more complicated. Now, there are plenty of folks out there who have the Ozzie and Harriet family, but that's less common than it was 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 years ago. And of course, it's not just that. I mean, the fact is that at times we have situations where children are estranged, or children or grandchildren have issues where sometimes it's they have special needs, or they have addiction issues, or they just spend too much money. we call that a spendthrift. And the truth is, when we have children, it only takes a few years to figure out whether those little ones are going to be spenders or savers. And once you figure that out, it doesn't change. Or at least it hasn't in my experience, and I think that's true for most parents. You learn pretty early the way your kids respond to money pretty quickly. So the bottom line is that if we care about what happens to our estate at our death, a revocable trust is the right way to go. Now, the other thing that a lot of folks don't realize, because so many people think estate planning is death planning, and that's all it is. And the fact is that so much of it is life planning. And in every trust I do, I have disability plans, which basically give typically your children fiduciary obligations to carry out your wishes, to take care of you with your money, of course, the way you want to be taken care of, not the way they would necessarily take care of you. You're leaving them specific instructions on how to take care of you. Well, for a lot of folks, that's really important. And for folks who are single, or what I call orphans, you know, where they don't have children or they don't have a close sibling who would take care of things if things go bad, having instructions where the trustee is obligated to care for you with your money, of course, the way you've set it out in your trust can be huge. The other thing is that the other documents that what we call ancillary documents, your wills, your powers of attorney. You know, one of the things anybody who's listened to me at all has heard me say that seniors need enhanced powers of attorney, not the kind of powers of attorney that most attorneys even will give you, not the kind of document that you're going to get out of a book, out of the statutes. The bottom line is you need more than that as you get older, because your issues, your legal issues, can be more complex as you're trying to preserve your estate for yourself, your spouse, and to leave something to your children and grandchildren. And so having the right documents in advance of any emergency or anything that you're not expecting, because no one knows when those when the crisis occurs, having those in advance are so important. Now, I know we have to take a break, but when we come back, I want to talk about what I actually mean when we talk about funding a trust.
We will get to that, and it is so important to have your documents laid out so that, you know, if you do have specific wishes and customization for the planning that you are intending, it puts your mind at ease. It eliminates a major worry and concern that I'm sure a lot of people have. If you've never spoken with an elder law attorney before or never had your documents reviewed by one, schedule some time to speak with someone on the team at WG Alexander & Associates. You can easily do that by going to wgalaw.com. You can also find information at wgalaw.com. related to their free webinars. If you're interested in learning more about long-term care assistance or asset protection and trust planning, there's an easy way to do it. WGALaw.com. Just click on the seminars button at the top of the page to learn more. A short break and back. You're listening to Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. We'll be right back after this. You're listening to Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. WGALaw.com is where you can go to find plenty of information related to WG Alexander & Associates and their free webinars. If you're interested in learning about Medicaid and VA benefits, forms of financial assistance available for families dealing with a long-term care crisis, this is an excellent opportunity for you to learn for free. Go to WGALaw.com, click on the seminars button at the top of the page. There's also a webinar dedicated to asset protection and trust planning. We're talking about trust right now. If this is something you'd like to explore further, again, go to wgalaw.com, click on that seminars button, register for the free webinars happening on Wednesday, August 14th. It's coming up, so be sure that you don't wait. Go to wgalaw.com to learn more. Jason Kong here with Bill Alexander. And Bill, we are talking about trust. And just before we went to break, you mentioned you wanted to dive into what you mean by funding a trust.
Absolutely. Well, it's often that folks will come in for a review of a trust that possibly was created 10 or 20 years ago by another law firm, sometimes by us, or they moved here from out of state and they have a trust document that was done there. And one of the first questions I'll ask them is, what's in your trust? And you wouldn't, you'd be surprised by how often it's one of those, they look at me with like a deer in the headlights, where it's like, what do you mean? I mean, what is that all about? And when that happens, which is pretty darn common, I know that their previous attorney didn't help them after they signed their documents. And if you look in their book, there's a letter in there that from the attorney that says, okay, now that you've done these wonderful documents, you're responsible for transferring everything or funding the trust. But because folks don't realize that there's a part of the trust that requires work after the documents are signed, they're just lost. Well, that's pretty important because a trust only works well if it is what we call fully funded. And that basically means that you've transferred the most of your assets, if not all of them, to yourself in trust. Now, what did I just mean by that, to yourself? Well, here's the thing that so many people don't realize, or I should start out with this. As attorneys, we typically describe funding a trust like you're putting your assets into a bucket or a wagon. In other words, it's like transferring property to an entity, like a corporation or a limited liability company, because both of those entities are capable of owning property. It might surprise you that a trust is not capable of owning property. So how in the heck do you fund it, right? Well, that's where the trick is. A trust, all it is, it's not an entity. It's an agreement. It's a contract. And that's all it is. But it's got a lot of law behind it. And when you create a trust, there are three principles of the trust. You have what we call the grantor, the person who creates the trust. And that could be two people. It can be a husband and wife. It could even be a siblings. You know, bottom line is you can have one person, you can have more than one person create a trust. Now, some lawyers use another name. I mean, some use the term trust maker, settlor, trustor, a grantor. All those words mean the same thing, the person who is creating the trust agreement. Okay. Now, when you create a trust agreement, you have to appoint someone to manage trust property. That is the person who's going to be in charge of investing the property and or spending or distributing income and principal from the trust. And that person or entity is called a trustee. Now, a trustee can be a corporate or it can be a person. And it's normally you. In other words, you're creating trust and you appoint yourself as that person. And then there's a beneficiary. And the beneficiary, in most revocable trust, you're all three. You're the grantor, you're the creator, you appoint yourself as the trustee, and you name yourself as the primary beneficiary. Now, husband and wife can do it too and name themselves as co-trustees and name themselves as beneficiaries. So that's the typical way a trust is created. Now, I know I have to take a break, but I'm going to come right back and explain how to fund a trust.
We will get into that. Don't forget, you can go to WGALaw.com if you are interested in scheduling some time to speak with an elder law attorney. You can schedule some time there. You can also call the office if you prefer to do that as well, 919-256-7000. 919-256-7000 is the number to call. A quick break and back. This is Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. You can go to WGALaw.com if you're interested in learning more about the subjects of asset protection and trust planning or long-term care assistance. There are two webinars dedicated to those subjects that are happening on Wednesday, August 14th. You can attend either or both of them for free by going to WGALaw.com and clicking on the seminars button at the top of the page. Learn more from Bill and the team at WG Alexander & Associates for free. Go to WGALaw.com to learn more. Jason Kong here with Bill Alexander. Bill, we're talking about funding a trust.
Absolutely. Now, when I'm talking about funding a trust, all it means is that we take property that's in your name individually or your name as a married couple, and transferring it to yourself as a trustee. And that's really important because it's not actually being transferred into the trust itself. It's being, because the trust can't hold property, the trustee holds property in a fiduciary capacity. And so that's where trust law comes into play. But the fact is that when you accept property as a trustee, then you're agreeing to hold that property under the terms of the trust agreement. And of course, when it comes to a trustee, that's not necessarily a person. It could be a corporate trustee, but it's almost always a person, at least in the ones we do. And okay, so, but the fact is if you die as an individual, that's what goes to the court. That's where you have probate and court administration. But a trustee, when a trustee dies or becomes incapacitated, you simply replace the trustee. And that's why what's in a trust agreement doesn't have to go through the court system, because you've already got those fiduciary obligations to carry out the terms of the agreement. And so that's what's so nice about a trust. And with a revocable trust, you're always using the grantor's social security number. Now, if you have a husband and wife, you can use either social security number on those, unless the institution puts both of the social security numbers on the account or the property. And so it's really not hard to do. For some things, in terms of funding, it means you change the beneficiary designation on the account, and that can be a POD or a TOD, you know, pay on death, transfer on death, or it can be just a regular old beneficiary designation from a retirement account or a life insurance policy. And of course, you can use beneficiary designations to transfer property to a trust upon your death, but you can also transfer property to yourself as trustee during your lifetime as well. Now, you can't move retirement accounts to your trust during your lifetime, but you can at your death if you wish. And of course, life insurance, you don't have to change, but you just have to make sure that the beneficiary designation is done right. Now, some folks will have some property transferred to themselves as trustee, and they might leave one account or a joint account that's not in their trust, but it has an ultimate beneficiary designation to the trust, so that the property doesn't have to go through probate and court administration. So that's a good way to do it. Another thing in terms of funding for me, and it depends on the trust agreement, a lot of folks use what I call a sweetheart plan, you know, everything to my spouse and then to our children in trust. but it can be, while it's all in a trust, if it's a disclaimer type plan, that's a sweetheart plan. So the bottom line is, with that, I'll normally put the home place into the trust. But if it's one that creates an irrevocable trust for the spouse, at your death, either way, then I normally keep the home place out of the trust, because it's generally owned by husband and wife together, and the survivor, by the deed, will own the property, and then after the first death, you can put the house into the survivor's trust for the benefit of the children and grandchildren. So those are good ways to make it work.
You can understand why it's great to have the guidance of an elder law attorney. If you would like to schedule some time to speak with someone on the team at WG Alexander & Associates, go to wgalaw.com to schedule an appointment. You can also call 919-256-7000. 919-256-7000. Quick break and back. This is Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. We'll be back after this. You're listening to Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. If you would like to register for the free webinars happening on Wednesday, August 14th, you can learn more about long-term care assistance, Medicaid, VA benefits, as well as asset protection and trust planning by going to wgalaw.com, clicking on the seminars button, and registering for those free webinars. It's free to do so. Go to wgalaw.com, click on the seminars button, to learn more. We're out of time for today. On behalf of Bill Alexander, I'm Jason Kong, thanking you so much for listening to Asset Protection Today with Attorney Bill Alexander. Have a wonderful day.